Inheritance. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the American Legion, presents a story out of that great composite of visions, struggles, and victories of the American past, our inheritance. Yes, we Americans are heirs to a vast fortune, a fortune compounded of many things. The arrival of the Pilgrims at Plymouth Rock. It is Colonel Washington building Fort Necessity. And the voice of a great bell proclaiming liberty. Let us now go back to a significant chapter in America's history, one which we all share in our inheritance. This is the story of a bell, not the largest nor the heaviest, but one of the most famous. Of all the bells in the world, none has been associated with events of so great import to humanity. Its long and colorful history began in the year 1752 in the bell casting foundry of Thomas Lester in London, England.
Oh, I say now, I don't understand this at all.
Eh? What's that, Whitcomb?
This order from America, from the province of Pennsylvania, for a new bell, Mr. Lester.
What about it?
Oh, I don't understand all of it.
It should be quite simple. They want a bell measuring 12 feet in circumference, about 7 feet around at the crown, to weigh about 2,000 pounds. It's signed by Isaac Norris, chairman of the superintendent.
Yes, sir, but the inscription they want.
I see nothing difficult about that, Whitcomb. It reads very plainly. By order of the Assembly of the Province of Pennsylvania, the State House in the City of Philadelphia, 1752. Now, what don't you understand about that?
It's not that part, sir. It's a quotation they asked for.
The quotation?
Yes, they want a verse from the Bible. See, right there. Leviticus 10th verse, 25th chapter, starting with the word proclaim.
I see. And they didn't say what the rest is.
No, sir, and I don't know my Bible well enough to...
Well, that's easily remedied. Here, I'll look it up for you. Leviticus, 25th chapter, 10th verse. Now, here it is. Proclaim liberty throughout all the land... unto all the inhabitants thereof.
Proclaim liberty? I don't understand it, Mr. Lester.
Frankly, Whitcomb, I don't either. However, if the Pennsylvania Assembly wants the inscription on the bell...
Yes, sir, I understand. They shall have it.
That's right, Whitcomb.
The great bell was cast that summer, and accompanied by its maker, Thomas Lester, started on the long ocean voyage to America. Too large to go in the hold, it was lashed to the main deck. When the ship ran into a storm and was severely mauled by heavy seas, several of the bell's lashing ropes broke. For a time, it appeared the bell might break loose completely and be lost overboard. Only with the greatest difficulty was it finally made secure. On September 1st, 1752, the bell was delivered in good order to the chairman of superintendents of the Pennsylvania Assembly, Isaac Norris.
It appears a fine bell indeed, Mr. Lester. What about its tone?
Well, frankly, Mr. Norris, it has not been rung yet.
Did they not test it before it left London?
Well, testing was not necessary. It was designed after Great Tom of Westminster, and no one can deny that bell's fine tone.
I've not heard Great Tom, but I shall take thy word for it. 'Tis only that when shipping something halfway around the world, it seems they should make certain everything is perfect.
Oh, your fears are groundless, Mr. Norris. The bell is in perfect condition. By the way, how did the Pennsylvania Assembly happen to select the quotation, proclaim liberty throughout the land?
It was my suggestion. It seemed appropriate.
Appropriate?
Yes. So many have come to America seeking freedom. Freedom of speech, freedom of worship.
But Mr. Norris, freedom and liberty are not quite the same.
Aye, Mr. Lester. But someday, perhaps...
Yes?
Someday, they may be quite the same here in America.
So you're going to test your new bell, eh, Mr. Lester?
We are, Captain Button.
I hope it performs better on dry land than it did on my ship. I handled difficult cargo before, but that bell was about the worst.
I see it is hung now. Is the rope firm to the clapper? Good. Thank you, lads. I'll take it. Mr. Lester, would thee care to test its tone?
Thank you, Mr. Norris. Good heavens. The bell is cracked.
I thought it has.
But this is unbelievable. It was in perfect condition.
But it is not now, Mr. Lester. What's to be done?
I shall return the bell to London at once and recast it.
Not on my ship, you won't, Mr. Lester. I'm through with that bell. It's a journey if ever I saw one.
Mr. Norris, are there any bell founders in Philadelphia?
There be, but none as good as thee, Mr. Lester.
Get me the best. I don't care about expense.
And who shall pay for the recasting?
I shall, of course. Since the error of not testing the bell is mine.
The job of recasting the bell finally was given to two young bell founders, John Pass and Charles Stowe, Jr. They studied the problem most carefully. Stowe finally decided to add more copper. So they melted down the cracked bell and carefully added 187 pounds of American copper to the 2,000 pounds of the original metal. The bell was recast. Upon being tested, it cracked again. The young bell founders were still perplexed when Isaac Norris called.
We may have to go up, Mr. Norris. We add the copper, as Charlie suggested, and she cracks again.
There's something about the design of this bell that...
Mr. Lester said it was designed after Great Tom of Westminster.
No, that's not it. Wait a minute. I think I have it.
Oh, what's that?
Well, it's probably completely crazy, but, well, I think it's worth a try.
What are you talking about?
The two inscriptions.
What about them?
Well, let's put the shorter one on top.
You mean the one, Proclaim Liberty?
That's right.
Well, I don't see how the...
Well, it's just an idea. Maybe it won't mean a thing, but... Well, it's worth a try.
Maybe Mr. Norris objects?
Not at all, lads. In fact, a Bible verse should always be placed over a mere order of the assembly, particularly this verse.
Well, now, we may have to shorten it even a bit more.
Shorten it?
Yes, to make the letters fit just right. For instance, well, now, change throughout to through. And we'll shorten the word unto so it reads to.
If a sound bell results, thee hast my consent.
Very well. Let's try it.
Whether reversing the positions of the two inscriptions actually made any difference is doubtful, but the fact is that on the third casting, the bell came out perfectly. It was hung in the bell tower of the State House in Philadelphia in November and was first rung to convene the Pennsylvania Assembly. The bell soon became a leading actor in America's history.
February 1757. Dr. Benjamin Franklin is hereby directed by the Assembly of the Province of Pennsylvania to go to England to seek redress of grievances from His Majesty the King.
July 1763. Joyous news for the people of Philadelphia. The French and Indian Wars at last have come to an end.
October 5, 1765. The people of Philadelphia today mourn the arrival in the Delaware River of an English ship bearing the first of the hated tax stamps.
February 1771. The Assembly of the Province of Pennsylvania is hereby called into session to write a petition to King George asking for repeal of the tax on tea.
June 1, 1774. The people of Philadelphia are in mourning. Word has been received this day that the port of Boston has been closed by the British.
But a high point in the bell's history came on July 8, 1776, when it summoned the people of Philadelphia to hear the first public reading of an important document.
Hear ye! Hear ye!
When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bonds which have connected them with another and to assume... We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. and for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honors.
The bell became a symbol to the people of the colonies in their fight against the tyranny of an English king. And then, in September of 1777, more than a year after the signing of the Declaration of Independence, there came a real threat to the city of Philadelphia and the Great Bell. The British were about to occupy the city. On a rainy night that September, a visitor from a nearby town calls on a good friend in Philadelphia to ask his aid in a daring venture.
No, John Mickley, me boy, I'd be for saying you might as well try to take the whole of Independence Hall through the British lines. It's a crazy idea.
Well, Tim, if you don't want to be in on it, why...
Well, now, who said I didn't want to be in on it? I merely said it was a crazy idea.
We've got to save the bell. And we'll do it if we have any luck at all.
Aye, and if we don't, we stand a right fair chance of getting our necks in a noose.
Are you afraid, Tim?
Huh? Me afraid? Let it never be said that Timothy O'Connell was ever afraid of an Englishman, or a whole army of Englishmen.
Well, we've got to start tonight.
Tonight? In all this rain?
Yes, we can't wait. The British are close to Philadelphia. Another day or so, they'll be inside the city.
All right, then. Tonight it is. Rain, mud, and all. Oh, who else is in on it?
Bill Wheelock and Henry Smallwood.
Smallwood, huh? Now, why him? He's not too bright.
But he's big and strong, and we need a strong man.
Yeah, you'd have more need for brains than brawn to get that bell out of Philadelphia and through the British lines.
We'll have both.
All right, then. When do we start?
We meet them at Independence Hall in just 10 minutes. Come on, Tim, let's go.
Well, I'm right with you, town boy. One thing to be said. There'll be no moonlight this night to give us away.
There, lads. She's all fastened down.
Thank you for all your help, Mr. Norris.
It is but my duty. As custodian of the bell, I've a duty to protect it, particularly from the British.
And we'll be taking the best of care of it.
I'm sure they will. Wish I could go along, but I be a mite old for walking. I could not keep up with thee.
Walking? Well, what's this, John boy? Aren't we riding?
No. Load's too heavy for the horses. We walk alongside. Henry! Henry Smallwood!
Yeah?
Give us a hand with this canvas. We don't want to advertise what's on this wagon.
Yes, sir. I bet we don't.
There. That ought to do it now. All set, John, me lad?
Where's Bill Wheelock?
Up here.
All right, then. Let's go. Head for Trenton.
Yep.
Good luck, lads. And may thee get our bell through safely.
Tim. Tim, look. Up ahead. British sentry.
Well, glory be. Well, there may be some excitement after all.
Just take it easy, Tim. We don't want an alarm sounded.
Oh, never fear that, lad. Leave him to me, John, lad. Just leave him to me.
Halt! Halt! In the name of the king!
Oh, oh!
What are you rebels doing out this time of night?
Rebels, sir? Why, we be but loyal subjects.
What have you got in that wagon?
Oh, it's just some household goods we were taking to Trenton, sir.
Household goods? Yeah, now, let me see.
Good heavens, Tim, you've killed him.
Oh, no, John, me boy. A little tap like that just gets him out of our way. He'll come through in due time. With a bit of a headache, of course.
Want me to drag him off to the side of the road?
A good idea, Henry. Ah, it is a shame that a pretty red coat should get so muddy. But we'll learn him a lesson. Never an Englishman should turn his back on an Irishman.
Bill.
Yeah?
Turn left at the next fork.
You're not going to Trenton?
No. That was to throw off anybody who might have overheard us. Take the old Minsey trail to Northampton Town. I've a hiding place all picked for the bell.
All right. We better be getting along. It'll be daylight in a couple hours.
Right. Let's go.
Yep.
When daylight came, The Liberty Bell and its four patriotic rescuers were well past the British lines, but still far from a place of real safety. They continued their slow trudging over the Mincy Trail until, on the morning of September 23, 1777, they arrived at a point overlooking a little town on the banks of the Lehigh River.
Oh, glory be. And can this be Northampton Town at last?
Not yet, Tim. This is Bethlehem.
Oh, me, no. And my hopes were so high.
Bill, take it slow and easy. The road into town is steep and rough.
All right, John.
Henry, you get up there and take hold of that brake handle. Keep the wagon under control.
Yes, sir.
Put on the brake, Henry.
I am.
But pull back harder. The wagon's going too fast.
Yes, sir. It broke.
Jump, Henry. Turn the horses. Turn the horses. The bell. The bell's fallen off.
Is it all right, John?
I don't know.
The wagon's broke.
Doesn't matter about the wagon. It's the bell.
It doesn't look hurt, John, boy.
No. No, it looks all right.
Couldn't hold the horses. I had to turn them. Sorry.
Don't worry about that, Bill.
What do we do now?
We find another wagon. This one's done for.
From the several wagons offered, John Mickley selected the sturdy wagon of Fred Leeser. That the Great Bell had passed safely through the British lines was now no secret to the people of Bethlehem. Yet no word was said about its destination, nor did the people ask questions. They wanted only to see the bell safely on its way. Using block and tackle, the bell finally was hoisted into place on Leeser's wagon. Miraculously, it had not been damaged in its fall. John and his companions next day moved slowly and with extra caution over the road to Northampton Town.
It is getting near sundown, John, me boy, and my stomach keeps complaining. It's such a long time since breakfast.
Not much farther, Tim. Northampton Town is just ahead.
How far have we come?
About 60 miles.
Well, it doesn't seem like more than 100.
There's Northampton Town ahead.
Good.
And that's where I'll be getting a good meal, I'm hoping.
Where do we head for, John?
The Zion Reformed Church on Hamilton Street.
You're going to church? And me about to starve to death?
Don't fret, Tim. We'll hitch the horses and wagon there and go over to the Northampton Town Tavern.
And the food's good down there.
Oh, the best in the whole countryside.
Aye, Bill, get your horses going, lad. There's a hungry Irishman here craving to be fed.
It was good of you to meet with us, Reverend Dobson. Would you care for something hot to drink and some cake?
Oh, thank you, no, John. You said you had a favor to ask?
Yes. You may think it a rather odd request, sir, but...
I trust I may help you.
Can we hide the Liberty Bell in your church?
Hide the Liberty Bell? Where could it be hidden? There's no room in the bell tower.
In the basement.
You couldn't get it through the door. It's a small door.
Sir, we can remove the flooring, lower the bell into the basement, then replace the flooring just as good as new.
Might be a risky thing to do, John.
All of us take risks these days, sir. Great risks. Of course, if you'd rather...
No, no, John. It's... Yeah. When do you want to hide it?
Tonight. About midnight. When all the town's asleep.
Midnight it is then, John.
That midnight, John Mickley and his three friends from Philadelphia, with the Reverend Dobson holding a lantern that they might see, quietly removed the church floor, lowered the bell into the basement, then replaced the floor.
There. All back. Neat as a pin.
Reverend Dobson, sir, I have a plan to confuse the British.
Yes? What is it, John?
Well, sir, we'll load a big rock on our wagon and cover it with canvas and start back Trenton way in the morning. That British sentry may or may not have suspected something. But, sir, if we double back on our trail, it should confuse them.
Oh, John, me boy, you don't need a big rock to confuse a Britisher. Sure, any little stone will do.
No, we'll use the largest rock we can find. It's got to weigh about the same as that Liberty Bell.
Oh, me, and I thought the hard work was over.
I think I know where there's just such a rock as you want, John. And I like your plan.
Thank you. And please remember, Reverend Dobson, secrecy is essential if we are to keep the Liberty Bell safely hidden.
Of course, John. My lips are sealed.
Mm-hmm. When the British occupied the city of Philadelphia on September 26, 1777, they were furious to learn that the Liberty Bell had been spirited away. General William Howe threatened dire things unless it was returned. Handbills were posted offering rewards for its recovery. A rumor reached the British High Command. The bell had been taken to Trenton and secretly lowered into deep waters of the Delaware River. Timothy O'Connell, happy at any chance to plague the British, reported he had seen some men lower a huge object into the river. He offered to point out the exact spot, and a squad of British soldiers went with him to Trenton. They reached the Delaware River after dark.
Right about here, Sergeant. There should be a boat tied up. Yes, there it is now. See it? In the shadow of the bank there.
Ah, I see it. Boom's bright enough to make it out easy. You mean the bell sunk here?
Oh, no. They lowered the object down the river a piece.
Then why'd you bring us here?
Well, now, I trust, Sergeant, it'll not be necessary to explain the operation of the river currents.
How's that?
Well, in fast-moving water, you don't row out direct to a spot. You can't. You let the current drift you down to it.
Ah, I see. But if you're drifting, how can you hold the boat at the spot where it sunk?
Oh, well, that's why we brought this rope along, you see. We'll tie it to the boat, snub the line around a tree trunk, and then ease the boat down to the exact spot. Now, that boat's big enough to hold all of you.
You're coming with us.
Oh, no, alas, Sergeant, that I can't. I know where it is from the river bank, for 'twas from here I saw them drop it. But out in the river, sir, I'd lose me bearings.
Oh, I'm leaving a man with you.
Well, of course, Sergeant. Well, I'd be needing him. I couldn't possibly handle the rope all by myself. But you'll need the rest in the boat, for 'tis a heavy object you'll be handling.
Private Borden, you help with the rope. The rest of you climb into the boat.
Sergeant, you'd best be leaving your muskets. The river's deep along here, and, if one fell overboard...
Not a bad idea. Stack your muskets, men, and Borden, you keep a sharp eye on them. I don't want one of them missing when we get back.
I'll take care of them, Sergeant.
Sure you got the rope snubbed around the tree, O'Connell?
Oh, sure, Sergeant. You've got the grappling hooks?
Of course. Take it easy, letting out the rope. And sing out when we're over the spot where it sunk.
All right, Sergeant. Good fishing. Borden, I can handle the rope around the tree. You see that it doesn't snag in anything between here and the boat, eh?
All right. Don't let it out so fast.
I know what I'm doing now. Oh, can you see the boat?
Yes, it's about 100 feet down the river.
Oh, good. They should be getting near the spot.
Not so fast with the rope.
Well, it's burning me hands, man. I can't help it.
Well, stop it. Hold the rope.
Well, I can't seem to grab hold anywhere. The end's almost here.
Well, do something. Grab it.
There's the last of it. Hold on to the end, Borden. There's a knot in it. Don't let go.
Oh, the boat's too heavy. It's pulling me.
Hold on, Borden. Don't let go. Ah, me. It is good that His Majesty's troops have such a nice moonlit night for a sail. Too bad there'd be no oars in that boat. Oh, well. Perhaps General Washington can find some use for these muskets. Sure, they'd only rust if left out in the night's dew.
And Tim O'Connell, next day enlisting in the Continental Army at Valley Forge, brought along 8 well-oiled muskets, lately the property of His Majesty's troops. The Delaware River rumor never was completely ruled out. It always returned to annoy the British. The bell was sunk further up or further down the river. Meanwhile, the Liberty Bell was safe and snug in the basement of the Zion Reformed Church in Northampton Town, today known as Allentown, Pennsylvania. When the British left Philadelphia on June 18, 1778, after an occupation of less than a year, the Liberty Bell was hauled in triumph back from Northampton Town to Philadelphia. And on October 24th, 1781, it was joyfully rung to announce the surrender of Cornwallis at Yorktown, the final chapter in America's fight for independence. But not all its missions were happy. It was muffled on December 18th, 1799, and told the death of George Washington. Later, while tolling the passing of Chief Justice Marshall, July 8th, 1835, it cracked for the third time. For a number of years, it remained silent and almost neglected. Then it was repaired and made ready to be rung on February 22nd, 1846, the anniversary of the birth of George Washington. The famed bell sounded clear and true. And then, suddenly, the bell cracked, cracked further and irreparably. In Independence Hall at Philadelphia, the 202-year-old bell now rests in silence, its mission gloriously complete. Today, we pause to pay tribute once again to that July day in 1776 when the great bell, for the first time, did
proclaim liberty through all the land to all the inhabitants thereof.
This day, the 4th of July, and that great symbol of our liberty share highest honors in our inheritance. You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. We are privileged this evening to hear from the National Commander of the American Legion, Department of Connecticut, Mr. Arthur J. Connell.
The American Legion has been proud and happy to cooperate with the National Broadcasting Company in the presentation of this series of radio programs, which has dramatized our inheritance of freedom, courage, and initiative. The American Legion, since its founding in Paris 35 years ago, has consistently undertaken programs which uncover the enemies of freedom, teach the appreciation of our blessings, build solidly for America's future, and serve our fellow men. Our aims have not changed since they were first phrased in our immortal Legion preamble. For God and country, we associate ourselves together for the following purposes: to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States of America, to maintain law and order, to foster and perpetuate a 100% Americanism, to preserve the memories and incidents of our associations in the Great Wars, to inculcate a sense of individual obligation to the community, state, and nation, to combat the autocracy of both the classes and the masses, to make right the master of might, to promote peace and goodwill on earth, to safeguard and transmit to posterity the principles of justice, freedom, and democracy, to consecrate and sanctify our comradeship by our devotion to mutual helpfulness. This is our preamble. This is our pledge. This is our inheritance.
Thank you, Mr. Arthur J. Connell. Next week, Inheritance will take you on another journey through the pages of history to a time when Americans, dreaming of the future, forged that which we possess today. Today's story, Proclaim Liberty, was written by Ted Weir and featured Dennis Patrick. Included in the cast in order of their appearance were Richard Peel, Donald Lawton, Howard Culver, Kurt Martell, Hal Gerard, Jack Carroll, Lamont Johnson, Herb Ellis, and Paul Dubov. The original music was composed and conducted by Robert Armbruster. Inheritance is produced and directed for the National Broadcasting Company and the American Legion by Albert McCleary. This is John Lang speaking.
You're listening to Same Time, Same Station, the best in old-time radio.